There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on, let
it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Our next guest probably deserves a bit of a rest this morning. Mind you, he didn't run 26 miles yesterday, and thanks to him, we did. So here to soothe our aching quads with a huge announcement. It's the big boss of the TCS London Marathon, Show Me The Way Sher, Hugh Brayshaw.
Morning, Hugh.
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Vassos.
Congratulations. Does it just get better every year?
Look, it's just it seems to be that way.
It does.
The crowds, you know, Vassos has been saying, you've been saying, everyone I spoke to yesterday was just going, the crowds seemed to be louder and louder and louder. And I was travelling on the tube and going between the start and the finish. I couldn't get on the tube. When you were on it, you were more like a sardine than you were a person.
So, just the
crowds and that visceral feeling of love that you get. It's a bit like the show. Every morning you wake up, you get this incredible dollop of positivity, and that's exactly what the London Marathon is, from total strangers wrapping their arms around you and just cheering you every step.
And they seem to be getting better at supporting. It was never bad, but it doesn't have to be bad to be better. There were more signs, there were more jelly babies, there were more bands, there were more tambourines.
Yeah, I mean, you were asking people to bring their signs, you were telling about the... It is, you just need something to take your mind off these things. Yeah. Now, Vassos is talking about each of the last 3 miles, it's for his kids. But something in your head, you need something just to keep going, and that crowd will just will you to that finish line.
Yeah, I mean, that is the extra ingredient that you're never ready for, no matter how many times you've done it. You know, it's just, they do give you wings. That crowd gives you wings.
We're meant to be, aren't we meant to be quite a reserved race? Not on London Marathon Sunday morning. I mean, and honestly, if you're running along, I mean, forget, obviously, if you're a minion and you sort of draw some eyes and you
were
start...
Were you a minion? Did you run as a minion?
But if you start whipping the crowd, anyone starts sort of like trying to sort of, come on, everybody, give us a cheer, they just respond instantly with such verve and vigour. It's such a treat. They're such... wonderful good wishes and love coming over the barriers into the runners. How can you not love what you're doing?
Yeah, the London Marathon lifts you up. That's the whole point. Noel Fitzpatrick, the super vet who ran it yesterday as well, he said, you know, he had a real couple of issues. He had to sit down at one point on the pavement, and he said somebody stopped their race. You know, they were probably going for a time. Stop, usual story, stopped their race, made sure he was all right, and literally lifted him up. And he said, but that individual moment was a metaphor for the whole day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I spoke to a friend of mine. He was trying to get under 3 hours. He was with a pacer, and he said the camaraderie. He said the pacer was the most amazing. He's got his name. He wants to thank him. He just was the most amazing guy. And then between the group, they were handing each other water bottles. They were encouraging people. And then basically about half a mile before the end, he just left the pacer goodbye and didn't say really goodbye and dashed off and ended up with 2 hours and 57.
Yeah.
So it is this feeling of love, as you say, that. Just, it's unique. And if we could bottle it and we could open it or give it a spray, that is what life needs at the moment. Yeah. And that's what you get. And, you know, if you want some of that April the 27th next year, try and get involved in whatever way you can.
TCSLondonMarathon.com. Sign up for the ballot. Open till Friday?
Absolutely. Open till Friday at about 5 o'clock. Absolutely.
All right. So at the beginning, at the start, we were all mustering. The BBC were there doing their brilliant coverage. Lots of other independent people, broadcasters from around the world. You know, lots of people running from overseas. All awesome. So exciting meeting all these different cultures. A real, you know, as you just said, as you spoke to, as the world should be. And the night before, Steve Cram and Paul Radcliffe once again graced us with their presence for all our lovely auction winners who bid all that money. And I was talking to Steve about the BBC and about the coverage. And the BBC, they get loads of data on the day. And I know you do too. And you work in conjunction with the BBC. And he said over the last few years, he said the stats are there. Britain has officially fallen in love with running, whether it's shuffling, whether it's walk running, whether it's race walking, whether it's elite running. He said, and the BBC, now they've extended the coverage. It's gone from 4 hours to 5 hours now, and it might go to 6 hours. And he says the information that they're getting, the social media interaction that they're getting, Britain is officially in love with running. Of course, people are still cycling. Of course, people are still swimming and entering triathlons. But this is the thing now. What is your sense of that? What can we do with that? Do we just look after it and polish it and wrap it in cotton wool? What do you think, Hugh?
Look, I think we have to just try and keep expanding it. There's a huge amount that we're trying to do in terms of diversity, equity and inclusion. There was a 19-year-old Down syndrome runner called Lloyd Martin yesterday. I think you might have...
Record holder.
Yeah, record holder. So we were trying a trial of 200 runners with a disability and really giving them a huge amount of support. Our team trying to make sure... And this is a trial... So that next year we can maybe go to 1,000. And just we want to be able to open up running to the world, yeah. Genuinely to the world. And we are part of World Marathon Majors. I know you've been to New York. You know, there's Boston I think you're going to go to. And it brings people together. It just brings the world together. It was on in, I think, in 194. Eight countries would have been watching.
You just invented two then.
Yeah.
So, all the countries 96. In the world plus two. I'm allowed a bit of hyperbole this morning.
By the way, this is the show for that.
Yeah.
You know. Yes. Oh, my goodness me. And I know that, obviously, your dad started the marathon in 81. You know, and it is a business, and you're responsible for that business. But now you are more responsible for what it can achieve.
Look, I definitely am a custodian yeah. of an unbelievable brand, and how that, you know, it needs to keep moving on. It needs to keep developing. Society changes. We've had so much change since COVID. And, you know, the day before we had the kids mini London Marathon, yeah. 12,940 quick kids. We didn't lose a single one, and we gave them all back to the right people.
And you paid them a tenner.
And we paid them a tenner.
Yeah, professional athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And honestly, there were kids going, this is the best day of my life. And if that doesn't get your heartstrings, I mean, it is quite incredible. So, yeah, we need to keep developing. We need to keep changing. We had an incredible sustainability summit on Friday. Some of the ideas got some really, really crazy ideas. I can give you one as an example. Wouldn't it be amazing if we managed to plant a tree throughout the route of the TCS London Marathon? So it was a tree-lined route. Right. And just what that would do for people's mental health, their physical health, what would it do for the communities along the route?
Yeah.
So
it helps sunscreen us as well, running.
Yeah.
So I know it's not about us, but...
Yeah.
And you cut down the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, let's do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go and buy some space today.
I love it.
But it's ideas that you've got to have a vision. You've got to go, totally. This is what we want to do. And again, it's the team. They, you know, Kate Chapman, who's our head of sustainability, absolutely brilliant. And yeah, we sort of transset these what almost seem to be impossible targets. Like people think 26.2 miles is impossible. Yeah. It isn't.
You could have a tree mile, couldn't you? I mean, honestly, I'm not just saying this because it's cute, but there was somebody running as a tree yesterday. I don't know if you saw them.
We actually
saw them at Mile Tree. It was so funny. It was so funny. It was Mile Tree for the tree. All right. Other headlines from yesterday.
For me, again, just Emil Kores coming third, Mohamed fourth. Yeah. We haven't had a non-disabled male in third and fourth for something like 26 years. They were both going for the Olympics. I was asked the night before about what would be my absolutely perfect marathon. And it was Kenenisa Bekele winning. It was Emil Kores getting on the podium. It was a women's world record. and it was getting over 53,000 people around safely and then breaking the charity fundraising. And look, it looks like we pretty well did every single one except Ken and Issa.
But he's let you down then, Ken and Issa, hasn't he, coming second?
Yeah, but you have to leave a bit of room for improvement, don't you?
I mean, 41 years old.
Oh. Yeah.
And he runs the, you know, the record, world record. We had Richard Whitehead running a world record. Yep. I mean,
He was pumped, by the way, beforehand. I was with him.
Was it? Yeah.
He was on it. Because I was with him last year as well. A different athlete this year.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just, you know, you sort of, again, you put these dreams and you think about it. But for that to pretty well happen on that day is just incredible. And life doesn't get much better than that. Yeah, of course I've got a smile on my face. I might be tired. The team are absolutely exhausted. They're still taking down the infrastructure.
Yeah.
When you're bringing that positivity to the world, it just is so incredible.
I had a lovely face yesterday at the start line with Jasmine Paris and with Russ Cook. Hardest geezer, hardest woman on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, I was like the cat that got the cream. It was my favourite photo of the day by miles.
Yeah.
Just a joy to have those two.
Yeah, look, I think they were some of the most popular people to have the photos taken
with.
Without
question.
It was just exactly why wouldn't you want the hardest woman and the hardest geezer?
Yeah, yeah.
And look, they're just such lovely people.
Yeah. And so different. I mean, they've achieved similar things, but they're so different as people. And that's the whole point, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, you bring people together. You realise that even if we fundamentally are different, we're very, very similar.
Yeah.
And you know, running 26.2 miles breaks down those barriers so that you realise that you are the same. You're going to help someone. You're going to give them support. They're going to support you. We need more of that.
Yeah. TCSLondonMarathon.com if you want to sign up. Get into the ballot. And if people aren't successful, and most people aren't successful, obviously it's 1 to 8 or 1 to 10 last year. Hopefully it'll be more this year. But how does the Brighton Marathon feed into that then?
Yeah, so actually when you're in the ballot, you get an option that if you don't get in the London Marathon, come and do the Brighton Marathon.
Right.
It's a couple of weeks beforehand. Again, I mean, I think I've talked about it before, such a stunning city.
Right.
Again, you'll just get amazing crowd support. You're on the seaside. Can be a little bit even windier.
Yeah.
But you've got so many people around you. Actually, funny enough, we're not the elite runners. We don't feel that wind as badly
because we've got
other people in front of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're all running in the same direction. Mm-hmm. So we're creating our own wind.
Yeah. In more ways than one.
Yes.
Never trust the force after mile 10. My favourite sign of the day. Oh, it made me laugh so much. Anyway.
And so true.
Yeah, so like the truest. Right, so you're here to make, by the way, you're here to just be here, and we love you being here anyway on the Friday and the Monday. Let's make this a thing. Friday, you've always come on Friday. Please come on the Monday every year.
Love hearing your stories.
Let's do it.
And just love it. So yeah, there is a little announcement we've got to make.
You say a little announcement. I know what it is, but I'm not sure. So off you go.
So yeah, I mean, we probably had yesterday about 90 people going for a Guinness World Record. You know, whether it's the fastest vegetable, whether it's the fastest man carrying a fridge. And again, Vassos has been talking about that amazing marriage proposal that he had, and it really wasn't that. Would you carry me, Vassos? That really, it was not that.
Anything for a gag. Anything.
Yeah, I know.
Pathetic.
It was quite a good one.
It was quite funny, but isn't desperate as well at the same time.
But yeah, we actually want to help everyone to be a Guinness World Record holder.
Right.
So.
Oh, here we go.
So.
Yes.
For the 2025 TCS London Marathon, we want to break the Guinness World Record as the largest marathon on the planet.
Come on. So how does that happen?
So basically, I mean, we actually nearly did it this year.
Right.
We really nearly did it. So Paris currently has the record, and the record is 53,899.
And what were we yesterday?
We still have to sort of add all the various things up. We were about 53,875.
No, we were not.
No, seriously.
Shush.
We're about 24, 25 people away from the record.
Van Kesra, for the sake. So
unbelievably, we were so close.
So how? I mean, obviously, lots of people sign up and then they have to defer. People get injured.
Yeah.
So is how How are you going to squeeze that into? How are you going to manifest that?
So we always let more people in,
right?
So we generally we've let about 65,000 people in to get the number of finishers, and we do an awful lot of predictions about how many people we're going to get. But we, you know, there's a huge amount of work gone on this. We were looking at the plans last year. That's part of the work I was doing with the team yesterday.
Yep.
And we're very confident that we can get another 25 people in the event.
Right.
We do talk to all the London authorities, but we really want to go over the 55,000. We're pretty sure that we're absolutely certain that the event can do that. So we're going to give people more chance to getting in.
Right.
So again, if you want to do it, it's going to be the 45th, the biggest, and you will be able to, as long as we beat the record, you'll be able to have your Guinness World Record plaque up in your house.
Wow.
So we can hopefully, and it would then make the most number of people ever having a Guinness World Record plaque, which in itself would be a Guinness World Record.
And all over Paris, all over France, they're having to take them down and going, oh, les Anglais.
Fassos, enough. I mean, we're all thinking that, but we don't say that loud.
Oh, sacre bleu.
And worse. Sacre bleu plus.
Yes.
And so are you going to extend the number of entries then?
Yes, so we will. More people will be able to get in.
So how many ish? 70,000?
So we will basically probably go for something in the region of 70,000 people to get
Great.
In to beat the record. That's what we're here to announce today. First time that we've said that. And, we were so close this year. But, yeah, come on. We do like sort of annoying the French a little bit.
He's at it now.
Yeah.
Jeez, listen to these two.
I always thought that New York, because New York always was the biggest one. And I always thought because they're big, wide, like first, basically it's all the way up First Avenue and then turn left into Central Park. And I thought because our streets were a bit smaller that we had to cap the number of, but that's not the case, obviously.
No. Yeah, we've done
it. So you're having a go at the Romans now as well, the Italians?
Yeah.
Okay. It's all going very well here. It's about bringing people together, this.
Yeah, bringing people together, but maybe not the French. No, I shouldn't say that.
Oh, you! What have you done?
Sorry. There are so many French people in the UK, I really shouldn't be saying that.
There's a lot of people there from France coming on the London Marathon. Great. Let's do it, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely. So, look,
sign up.
You never know. And as you say, you know, we will tell you beginning of July.
Yes.
So you'll have plenty of time to prepare.
Yep.
And as you've talked about, it's like, you know, whether it's couch to 5K, a park run, just go on this incredible journey of just making your body more alive and you more connected to your body.
Yeah. You basically, you reach out to your body, you form a relationship with it and your mind, and then you work in concert with each other, not just building up to a race, but our actions are about habit energy, and you get this automatic habit energy if you do something enough times, and you just have a better existence. Wake up every morning, you feel better, you're more positive, you're kinder, you're nicer, you're brighter eyed, you're more bushy tailed. I feel great today. I feel the best I've ever felt on the Monday, and I thought it was the marathon that broke me. It wasn't. It was the pub and the curry house afterwards, because I don't drink anymore. I still went to the pub and I still went to the curry house. You know, don't stop going to pubs, just order fizzy water or whatever. I had 3 pints of full fat Coke, for which my teeth are tingling this morning, but the rest of me's fine. So it wasn't the marathon that broke me, it was the night out afterwards.
Yeah.
So, and I've learned that from wanting to be fitter and healthier because I want to go quicker.
Yep.
You know, it's great, man.
Yeah, and look, I mean, running the first 6 or 7 weeks can be a little bit of a little bit tricky. Then those endorphins, those natural chemicals kick in and just make you feel better. And you don't have to set yourself a time, walk a bit, run a bit, you'll suddenly start running a little bit more.
Yep.
And that Couch to 5K app, download it. It's just the best way
to
start.
Have you got that on your site as well? Do you do all that stuff?
The BBC Couch to 5K.
Right. That's massive now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what Steve was talking about, actually.
Yeah. More than 7 million downloads of Couch to 5K. And it's such a brilliant way. And then get into Park Run.
Yeah.
You know, you are never last in Park Run. There's always a tail walker behind you.
Yep.
I mean, look, our team were there at the finish line till midnight last night for the last people finishing.
Yeah.
You know, if there had been 20 more, 4 more people, maybe would have been, a little longer.
Stay to one, you might have gone.
Yeah.
Well, hang on a minute. You've not done your final numbers. We might have broken it, but we so don't want to, really.
You know, we always like to just try and do a little bit better.
If it turns out that you have broken it, then you're going to keep quiet.
Well, look, we might just have to disqualify a few people. I mean, what the heck?
Yeah, yeah. These are Fermé sans bouche. Anything else you today?
No, look, just please get... And enter, you never know, and it is genuinely, as you talk about on this show...
Transforming.
It's transforming. That's exactly what it is. So just thank you for... you know, I know how much your listeners get involved. I love listening to this show.
It's good for the show. It's good for business.
Yeah, yeah.
It's absolutely a win-win. Thank you. What's next?
The next is Ride London in 4 weeks. So right. Ford Ride London, it's 100 miles or 60 miles or 30
same
miles
again.
Of cycling. Yeah, absolutely. Same again. And then we've got, you know, if you are looking at, you were talking about a half marathon earlier, the big half. So it starts at Tower Bridge. This is in September. Starts at Tower Bridge, finishes at the Cutty's Arc. It is a brilliant
Can
event.
Can we do that?
Yeah, we would love to come and have you. And it is about really trying to inspire the London communities through who the route goes through to get involved. And again, it's got just the most incredible vibe.
Can we chat about that then?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll chat about that. We'll get that ongoing. We're up for next year. Loads of people want to rebid again. And it was, I think it was 167,000 yesterday.
And that charity fundraising, that's, yep. You know, we're certain we're going to smash the record this year. It was
right,
66
mate.
Million.
Well, have a lovely Monday.
Thank you. And thank you so much to you.
Oh, you're well done. And because your team is so good and you rave about them all the time, quite rightly, by the way, you can't rave about them enough. You could actually run it as well. You could have your backpack on and imagine that. Imagine if, look at his face, event organising from the track. That'd be cool.
Now, look, I absolutely am going to run it in 2030.
Right.
So I'm 65 in 2030.
Are you actually?
Yeah. And the event will be 50. 100%.
So you're 59 now?
Yeah, I'm 60 this year in September.
You look amazing, man. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Thank you. That's there is the plan. I haven't done it since 2003. My father passed away that year. Did it sort of six weeks later. And again, just, you know, there was some silence. We had, you know, the applause for Kelvin Kipton.
That was great.
Then there was moments of silence. My mum started the event in 2003. And I remember I was behind Steve Jones. And this was Steve Jones, who'd won the London Marathon in about 20 years before. And Steve is just lovely, lovely guy. But I think he was still wearing the shorts that he had run in 20 years before. And Steve wasn't quite the same weight as he was.
Yeah.
So anyway, Steve and I set off together.
Good for the compression.
Very good for the compression.
People make millions out of selling those shorts.
Well, I'm not sure you should be doing it in shorts in that way. But anyway, it was a very emotional day for me.
Okay, I've got a confession to make to you. So we had that chat on Friday morning about your dad. I didn't know your dad paced for Roger Bannister until you told me. You probably told me before, but I didn't hear it. So I went home and I sent you a screen grab of Chariots of Fire because I thought, I want to see who plays your dad. Of course, it isn't about the 4-minute mile. It's about the 1924 Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm like halfway thinking, when's his dad going to appear? This is not happening, is it?
No, 30 years later.
So I need to watch. There is a film called The 4-Minute Mile, isn't there?
I've just seen.
No, there is a movie.
Is there a movie called The 4-Minute Mile? There was a great book. John Brandt wrote a really good book about it. But the three of them, I mean, they were incredible people.
Yeah.
Chris Chataway, Sir Roger Bannister, and my old man, what they achieved.
Your old man.
Talked to on the 50th, I guess, anniversary of the 4-Minute Mile. We were in Oxford. We went, we saw Roger Bannister. It's part of a radio show I was working on at the time. And we had a cup of tea the next morning. And he once said to me that you should get outside your comfort zone every day if you can, because then your comfort zone just expands.
Which is why you keep on turning up to work.
Yep.
Perfect. And by the way, you do the same for me automatically. Hugh, you're awesome. Your team
Thank
are
you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
53,750 thank yous.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and 24 merci. Yeah.
Stop it, you two now. It was all going so well. Brilliant. All right, that's it. TCSLondonMarathon.com. I promise not to talk about it for at least another 5 minutes.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
Our next guest is quite literally the guest of our dreams and yours. And his. He's the brain surgeon and neurobiologist whose new book, This Is Why You Dream, is out now. So please welcome the dreamy, serene Rahul Chandia.
Good morning, Rahul.
Good morning. It's good to be back.
Well, look, you're fighting fit. You've dropped 15 pounds. You've hit 50. You've hit the gym. And also, you're in the middle of all that post-marathon energy yesterday in London.
I did feel that when I was at Piccadilly. There were people walking with the foil. And, you know, they were hobbling, some of them. But the looks on their face was a different kind of high. It was triumph.
Yeah, they look like turkeys about to be put in the oven.
Something about the pelvic muscles, right? They start crunch forward.
It's all about, and the buttocks and the piriformis and the sciatica. We've got it all going on. Great to see you, man. So we're 10 academic books in. This is your third with Penguin. It's an amazing book. This Is Why You Dream. All right, so we know that our brains are amazing. Of course we do. You know that better than anyone else. You're a neurobiologist. You're a neurosurgeon. But what can they do when we're asleep? Dreams are fascinating. They can predict the future. We build all these sets. We design all the clothes. We give the people the voices. There are different narratives. There are cliffhangers within dreaming that can be used. They can be used as therapy. And we've known that for ages. So beyond that, why were you compelled to write the book?
Well, because now we have neuroscience that can explain some of those patterns. So first of all, there are universal dreams, nightmares and erotic dreams. That's interesting. Maybe they shape the mind. Then there are other dreams that change patterns. When color TV came in, dream reports, waking people up to see what they're dreaming about, went from black and white to color. So when you look at different cultures over centuries, they're still reporting dreams of falling, dreams of teeth falling out. And it made me think, can these patterns, because they follow rules, right? Can these patterns be explained with brain biology? Right. And more than ever now, we have some answers to that. And I'll give you one specific example. Very few people report doing math in their dreams. And when you look at the dreaming brain, right, we have to talk about the waking brain and dreaming brain, a 24-hour cycle. The dreaming brain, the logical centers, the executive network, is down. And so people don't report a lot of math dreams. At the same time, it's highly emotional. Those emotional centers, the limbic system, is dialed up. And that correlates with a lot of people having emotional and social dreams. So being able to connect what's going on with the brain with what people have been talking about for thousands of years, that's what's fresh about this book.
There are some astonishing revelations in the book. Again, it's all science-based. There's all science to back this up. It's not you woo-woo dream analysis, which is fun. Could be right, who knows, but this is actual science based from stats and facts and all this amazing research, which has only really just begun. We're only scraping the surface here. This is why we dream. This is the book we're talking about with Rahul. There are rules to dreaming.
There are rules to dreaming. So one we just talked about, math is very rarely reported. The other one is nightmares. 90-something percent of people report nightmares. I don't have to tell you what a nightmare is. We all know what it is. Erotic dreams tend to happen a lot. And just underneath that, you have sort of showing up for a podium naked before a speech, or missing an exam when you have an exam planned. These patterns have followed for centuries. And the question is, why? How does culture change? How do we go from a carriage and a buggy and we still have those dreams? It's because they're symbolic. They represent something social, and it's based on anxiety and emotional concerns, not logic. And that's the power of dreaming. It's a hyper-emotional state, hyper-visual state that you can't get to with the waking brain. And me, when I thought about that, I was inspired. Like, this is a portal to self-exploration that does not exist while we're awake.
So why do we dream? I know you've written a book about it, and it's a great book, but why do you think? What's the headline?
Yeah, the headline is, we dream to remain imaginative and creative and adaptive. And let me give you an example of why. So when you look at the dreaming brain, it's electrically on fire. So this myth about like, oh, when you sleep, your brain is resting. No, your body's resting. Yeah. Your brain electricity is through the roof. Your metabolic usage is still there. So what's going on in the brain that's so important that forces us all to sleep? I think, if I can be bold, we sleep in order to dream. And what part of our body needs to dream? It's the brain. Let me give you an example. When we did surgical training and we had a night without sleep, the next night people reported more dreams. And as they're tracking that, if you skip a night of sleep, if you have sleep pressure, you jump into dreaming earlier. At the same time, at the very end of life, we're finding that electrical rhythms for people at the moment of cardiac death are having this robust release of neurotransmitters and maybe a massive dream.
Okay,
so something programmed in there.
Let's get into that. I was going to leave that to later, but because you've touched on it. So this amazing research, this discovery of after people have passed, they carry on dreaming.
Right. So let me just frame this. So when there are measurements, so that doesn't need interpretation. In this book, when I'm putting things together, I say, I wonder, wouldn't it be elegant? Measurements are measurements, and this is how this is set up. There was a patient who had electrodes on his chest, an EKG. We get that, right? We know that electrical rhythm. Same electrodes, 96 of them, can be put on your scalp, and you get a brain EKG, if you will, right? It's called an EEG. He had written, if I were to pass away by having a heart attack, don't resuscitate me. So he was also getting his brain recorded and his heart recorded. At the moment where the heart was flatlined, like we see in television, for the minutes afterwards, the brain electricity was through the roof. Expansive memory, dream type electricity. That's a measurement. I'm not here to tell you something that's my interpretation. There's about four or five more studies suggesting that. I believe the brain, in its final moments, when the heart is stopped and it still has a few minutes of glucose left in there, fires off a salvo as its ultimate goodbye. Now, that's my romantic interpretation, but the science measurements are showing that brain electricity persists minutes after the end of cardiac electricity. So it's not really heart's electrical silence that should be the time of death, but the brain's electrical silence that should be the time of death.
So it may well
and I've
be,
been a doctor for 20 years.
Yeah, it may well be that we go out with a bang.
I think it is. I
whether
think
we like
is.
It or not.
I think it is. And well, people, when they come back from near-death experiences and they report all these memories that span their life, I think there may be something there.
And sleep apnea, you know, with sleep apnea, we stop breathing. So it's temporary death as well, or it's not dissimilar. And lots of people dream at that moment. Maybe there's a connection there.
Well, that's interesting. It's not temporary death. It's just oxygen going up and down. But really what's happening is they're coming in and out of sleep. They're waking up a lot.
Right.
And Salvador Dali tried to play with that. So sleep entry and sleep exit, right? We talked about the waking brain and dreaming brain. Well, those junctions aren't like, you know, a hair or a millisecond. There's a blurry time when you sleep during sleep entry and sleep exit for about 10, 15 minutes. Your waking brain waves and your sleeping brain waves overlap. And Salvador Dali talked about it, Inception, that movie, Christopher Nolan mentions it. That's an interesting window where people have both waking memory and dreaming memory, and they can incubate thoughts and try to have more creative thoughts.
That's lucid.
Well, that's a different one. So very good. Sleep entry and sleep exit is Salvador Dali, Inception, creativity.
Right.
Lucid is in the middle. You wake up within a dream.
Can you do that?
Well, okay, I got to answer this. I thought not.
Right.
And then there's a reason there's two chapters based on it.
Right.
I want to see rigorous science. Aristotle talked about it. And about 20, 30 years ago, they proved in sleep laboratories with the same electrodes proving that the person was asleep. There's a little squiggle for that. And the eyes can still persist. And they started communicating with left, right signals. And that is a reality. I think up to a third of people lucid dream, and it's inducible. So things that I thought didn't have science have tremendous science.
Yeah.
And the things that I assumed, you know, I thought, hey, there's no science backing that up.
That's interesting. That's so interesting for so many different reasons. I don't sleep very well, so I've got to get on with my dreams, haven't I? And I do. I have so many dreams every night. I have 8 or 9 dreams that I can remember specifically a night. And that's because I wake up every 90 minutes.
Well, I mean, and that's a gift. So remembering our dreams, people ask me, like, why don't we remember our dreams? I think the simple answer is so we don't have waking life and dream life confusion. We want to stitch the waking life memories together. That's something called autobiographical memory. But dreams, if you want to dream, if you try to dream, if you try to remember your dreams, it is inducible. And I would explain it the ways like a placebo effect. If you believe in something, even if it doesn't have a bioactive chemical, there's something in your mind, the neurotransmitters that create that state. So people report dream journals, all these different things, that they start to remember more of their dreams. And if you know it's a hyper-visual, hyper-emotional state, illogical by design, I think that's a good way to think about what's going on in your life rather than turning to wellness externally, is to think about that portal to your own thoughts that you have every day, every morning.
I think, I don't know what you think, I think dreams are the most fascinating, knowable secret that we just yet to discover. There's the pyramids, of course, there's Stonehenge, there's the weather, there's, you know, where energy comes from, how nature designs the sophistication, which is, you know, the head of a blossoming rose. But dreams are it. I think dreams could be the key to life, key to knowing life.
And that we're not totally in control of our brains.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you know, a third of our life could be spent dreaming.
Yeah.
What is this process that's built in? We can't resist it. We don't need to activate it. Uh-huh. It's stimulus independent. So it happens on its own. It drives us to sleep.
Yep.
What is the massive function? If you think about what's happening with the dreaming brain, you know, in our daily life, when you take the tube or I'm on an LA freeway, we're trying to get into habits. We want to be efficient. The limited use of resources, right? Like an efficient runner. But dreaming does the opposite. It launches all these different corners of our brain and mind. And we know use it or lose it. We know in muscles atrophy, if you don't exercise, you lose it. I think what dreaming is doing is activating all those emotions and concepts that we don't need during the day. But in the future, if we needed to be adaptive, it would still be there for us. It keeps us nimble. It keeps us open-minded.
I've just started self-hypnosis a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I get the dream state. I know when I'm falling. I can feel myself falling into a dream state when I'm self-hypnotizing in the afternoon to have a nap. And what do you think about that? What do you think about the correlation relationship there?
I haven't been able to tie together the science. So it's not that I'm being evasive on it. Like, for example, anesthesia dreams. Like, my patients, they wake up with a lot of different dreams.
Yeah.
We use a lot of different anesthetics. I'm a surgeon. I couldn't find a pattern there that I could explain. So I'm respectful in this book, hypnosis, drug-based dreams. There were too much for me to corral into a love story for dreaming.
There seems to be but different sleep authors, entry is different. Don't they? They're like a psilocybin hallucination will be from a different author, different school of film, if you like.
Very interesting. So hallucination versus dreaming versus psychedelic experiences. So we do know you might feel like you're in a dreamy state, but with psychedelics, all the different types, there's ego dissolution. The default mode network is dampened. In dreaming, you are fully inhabiting the experience. You're like you're in the driver's seat of a car you can't control. But with lucid dreaming that you mentioned earlier, some people can actually steer the direction of the dream while they're in the dream. And when you think about what I'm talking about, if people could just walk away and realize there's so much inside us, there's so much more we have to learn, but really that it's partially within your control. You can pay more attention to sleep entry for creative purposes. You can avoid the phone in the morning when you wake up to see what you were thinking about, to hold on to those solar flares of dreaming. You can try to become a lucid dreamer for creative purposes. So all of these things are power, superpowers within us that we can cultivate, that we don't have to spend money on, that we don't have to rely on somebody external, which sometimes can lead to exploitation, as we know.
Yeah, so I've been in control of dreams thinking, oh, I'm in control of this dream. But the problem is the second you realize that, you're no longer in control of it.
That's interesting.
It's interesting.
It's fragile. No, it's fragile. The lucid dreaming, people come in and out of it. It's not like, aha, I'm lucid dreaming.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a feeling of, and think about it, the memory system that dreams rely on, people say they get up to go to the bathroom, then they come back into a dream.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable to me.
But the dreams themselves, you know, like I say, you've got the people's faces that you've recreated perfectly. You've designed their wardrobe, the rooms they're in, the worlds they're in, the cars they're driving. I mean, what is going on?
The bold statement there is that our creative abilities are really coming from the dreaming process. a hyper-imaginative, what they call divergent thinking. Don't just go for the easy connection of the dots. Connect the dots that are farther away. These wider associations happen every night in our brain. So when you have that aha moment during the day, it's not because you're brilliant with your executive network trying to get from A to B. It's all that work that was done for you the night before.
Jeez. No. Do you think creative people dream more than non-creative people?
By report, we don't have a scientific measurement for that. But when you ask for questionnaires, absolutely, they have more nightmares as well.
Maybe because they don't sleep as much, perhaps.
Yeah, or they're just imaginative during the day and imaginative during the night, and they kind of bleed into each other.
24-hour gym.
Yeah, that's mind gym.
loads of questions coming in. One of the first things our brain does to us when we go to sleep and start to dream is it paralyzes our body for our own safety.
So when you have the most wild dreams in REM, there is a chemical paralysis of the body. Now, to me, now that's a measurement. My interpretation is this allows us to dream wildly without us acting out our dreams.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
Or doing ourselves harm.
Right.
Yeah, other people have said that before, haven't they? Louise from Coventry here. I don't think I dream, says Louise. Would I? Am I dreaming? Does everybody dream? My Garmin watch tells me I don't dream.
Yeah. Well, when we talk about dreaming, we can't talk in absolute. So when I said very few people report math, there'll be some people. And there are some people say, I've never had it. They know what a dream is. They know what a nightmare is. But they say, I don't remember our dreams. What I would say is, those people that don't remember their dreams, the electrical signatures at night are just as wild as those people say we dream quite a bit.
Right. This book is amazing. This is why we dream. It's called This Is Why You Dream by Rahel Jandiel, who we're talking to now. Sunday Times bestselling author. He's here for a week. He's going to party on Friday. Everyone's invited. Rosita says, please can you ask Rahel about sleep paralysis? I get it a couple of times a week with terrible hallucinations. I'd really appreciate any advice.
Okay. All right, this is a big topic because a lot of people have this. I was surprised to hear how many people have it. So sleep paralysis is the original nightmare. It's not technically a nightmare because a nightmare is by definition something that wakes you up and sears things into your memory. Sleep paralysis is an issue with sleep exit. We talked about sleep entry as a way to incubate creativity. Sleep paralysis is this feeling like there's a suffocation, somebody sitting on top of your chest. And maybe even violating you. These reports are so consistent that different cultures have come up with explanations for it, like incubus and succubus. So sleep paralysis, scientifically, is waking up while your body's still in lockdown. So those people tend to have a massive anxiety attack. The treatment for sleep paralysis is much like what they would guide for anxiety attacks. Slow, deep, rhythmic breathing to give yourself time to match your sleep exit. So your chemicals and your mind are in sync, and then you wake up as you're thinking about waking up. So that the techniques used for sleep paralysis are also the same techniques we use for general anxiety management.
Right, it's all in the book, seriously. What about nightmares? You talk about nightmares. Any handy hints that you want to share today?
Nightmares can be rescripted. I was fascinated by this. They're a product of our imagination. And with therapists, there are reports that the ending of a nightmare, if you're having persistent nightmares, can be rescripted with therapy, imagery rehearsal training. The other thing I want people to know about nightmares is they're a psychological thermometer. If we have headaches and they're getting worse, we know to call a doctor. If we have pain and it's getting worse, we know to get a doctor. If you have new onset nightmares and they're increasing and they're getting worse, consider it a psychological thermometer and talk to a therapist or a doctor. That would be my tip.
Can you do anything? Journaling? Does that help? People
report a lot of different things. Right. I think just the effort to try to engage your dreaming, to remember your dreaming, whichever process you
surrender
have.
Surrender to it.
Yeah, and welcome it. And whether it's your notes app or a journal.
Honor it. And what's he trying to tell you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the last chapter is really, you know, we have this rare, rare state of mind that is built into us. And on the occasion we can remember dreams, there are some that I think are worth taking a deeper look at. The obvious one, showing up naked for a podium, we know what that is, right? some are just static. It doesn't make sense at all. Some are epic dreams that happen. End of life, people have certain dreams. Pregnant women have certain dreams. So those don't really require interpretation. But a deeply emotional one, a deeply visual one, like that's the one to go after. That's the one to take time during the day and say, huh, what was that about? What was that social situation about? What was that visual situation about? I think that's something I've definitely included in my life since.
I love the fact we can park some dreams. That's great. It's like the shopping, isn't it? You get your peas, your beans, your bread. You know all that. And then what should we have fancy for the weekend? And fancy for the weekend is the emotional stuff, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but it's like waking thought. You know, we don't. Let's not hold dreaming thought to a standard we wouldn't waking thought. Not everything yeah. we think about during the day is worth holding on to.
Because you've now more than dipped your toe into this particular pool and you're making friends with the science of dreaming, have you, since you've been writing this book and this book has now come out, do you now have a different relationship with your own dreams?
I do. I was using sleep entry to sort of run through surgical planning for a while. That's been out there. I like that there was science behind it. But I have the luxury of a bed and time in the morning now to get up slowly. And I got to tell you, when I have almost all of my ideas have come in that morning, the first sort of 5-10 minutes, especially if I'm sort of waking up and falling back asleep again, there's some thinking that's going on in my mind in that time frame that I don't have the rest of the day. So when I've had ideas, it's in that window. Most of them are bad, but that is the idea generator.
Yeah, of course.
And that's how it works.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want them all to be good because then you'd have to spend your whole life executing these amazing ideas.
Oh yeah, or they aren't cutting edge, right? Yeah. If you're only dropping good ideas, you're not at the edge of it.
I say I sleep badly. I'm all right with how I sleep. You know, I've sort of come to terms that I've met it in the middle somewhere. Because why wouldn't I? I've got to meet it where it is because there's no point otherwise. But I do now nap in the day, and you speak to the power of a nap.
Napping is something that's becoming popular, and I think there is now some science behind it. It's the question is the duration of the nap. Is 20, 30 minutes good for you, or is like 60 minutes? I think the science is suggesting 20, 30 minutes. Don't let it be something that disrupts sleep later on.
The drive, sleep drive.
Correct. Just like, yeah, sleep drive, sleep pressure. I think the science is suggesting short naps can be helpful. I think we know that people have napped for we were talking about fasting earlier. We know that there are these things that have worked for a long time. I like the fact now that I can put some science behind some of these things.
Terry from Dorset says, this is utterly fascinating with Dr. Rahul. As a nurse, we always talk to patients immediately after death so they know they're not alone. Now I know why.
That's beautiful.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
Because their brain is still ongoing.
Well, just think about how that works. The last squeeze of your heart.
Oh my gosh.
Sends a surge of blood. And the way the arteries shut down is they shut down on the limbs first.
Oh.
So the last squeeze of your heart sends blood up your carotids. So you can imagine the last sort of blood vessels in the brain for a minute or two are still getting oxygenated blood. And those precious moments, you know, if I may, this is the part of the book that touched me the most was, you know, I did transplant surgery for a while. The other organs, they whimper as they fade. But the brain, it seems, somehow uses its last surge of glucose and blood to really just explode with a salvo of neurotransmitters. I think that is so beautiful and so romantic. And there's a measurement for that. Electrical brain activity 1 to 2 minutes after loss of electrical activity with the heart. It's not cardiac death that matters. It's brain death. And that happens a minute or two after we flatline. And this is science. This is a measurement, not my take on it.
That is a big deal, man.
It is a big deal. And that's what I end the book with.
Especially if you're with somebody, you know, who you love in an end-of-life situation.
Yeah.
So that is, it's so important to carry on talking to them for 5-10 minutes afterwards.
It's those 5 minutes afterwards that person may be experiencing the greatest thing, the greatest emotion, the greatest memories that human, that brain ever experienced might be in those first few minutes after cardiac death.
What's going on with these pesky advertisers attacking, targeting our
They're
dreams?
They're shameless. They're
in the
shameless,
future.
And there's gadgets everywhere.
What's going on?
Well, if you think of it this way, a couple hundred years ago, people were sleeping and they'd put like a finger in a cup of water to see if they had more dreams about water.
Yeah, or it makes you want to pee.
I mean, so your brain is not completely shut off when you're dreaming, mm-hmm. right? You wake up to alarms, you wake up to certain smells, so you're not completely closed off. And so marketers are trying to figure out if they play a certain song or play a certain song with a certain scent, if they can influence behavior. It's not surprising with all the gadgets that are going to be in our rooms. I would say, you know, neural data should be protected. That's something that you got to sign off on. Especially because when you're sleeping, you're vulnerable to ideas you wouldn't be while you're awake. So it should be, I think, an increasingly protected space.
So now that you've written the book and now that you're talking about the book, as you go to bed at night, are you more thoughtful of what's going on? You know, what have been your personal experiences in the middle of the night since this book? What do you think about the future of your own dreams? What do you think about the future of the world's dreams as we wake up to the reality, the proper science behind dreaming, as opposed to the snake oil salesman sort of fascination?
Yeah, so the things I would say are dreams can be induced. Dreams can be remembered. Dreams serve a vital function in us. And that I'm grateful that the human brain dreams, because it keeps us vibrant, flexible in our thinking, imaginative, able to connect with people in a social setting that we wouldn't otherwise. And I think for me personally, what I've done is really try to protect the 15 minutes before I go to sleep and the 5-10 minutes when I wake up. I haven't had a lucid dream, but I know people who've helped on this book have started to lucid dream.
You're on the right. I can see the spark in your eyes.
Yeah, but to know there's real science behind it, yeah. I'm actually more open to it. It's not metaphysical. It's actually neuroscience. To me, I think that brings more people into it. And the sleep entry period is very important to me, because whatever my challenge is during the day, whatever the riddle is I can't solve, you know, I think about it as the last thing as I drift off.
Yeah.
So I'm a lot more. You know, they talk about sleep hygiene to get more sleep. Maybe I call this dream hygiene. I feed my dreams, and I try, and I know they're putting
feed
in work.
Feed your dreams, man.
Feed your dreams, man, and get something
out
of it.
What about like fast forwarding 25 years or maybe 10 years? Who knows what's going to happen with this research and the knowledge that you discover and your friends discover? What about the fact that in the future we won't separate the day being awake from being asleep as two separate entities, two separate ways of existing, and the fact that when we're asleep, we're as alive and almost as awake as when we're not. Why separate the two? Maybe that's conventional thinking as opposed to open-minded wisdom. You can have it is a 24-hour day experience as opposed to an 8-16.
It is. I mean, that's a big question. And what I would say is the waking brain has that autobiographical memory.
Yeah.
So the evolutionary advantage was to have our brains fine-tuned and kept open-minded at night. But as the light came today, that you go out for the tasks in front of you, whether that's hunting or navigating the streets. And to do that, we need to stitch the memories from the days before.
Yeah.
I have been the person from LA to here and back to LA. That autobiographical memory, I think, is why dreams are not held on to, even though they're doing quite a bit of work for us while we sleep.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're just about done. Is there anything else you'd like to say to people listening?
It's good to be back in London.
Hey, come on. Very quickly. I know we're over time, but very, very quickly. By the way, that was Rahul talking about his book, This Is Why You Dream. It's out now. It's amazing what your sleeping brain reveals about your waking life. A lot of people running the marathon yesterday, most people have a wobble to the extent that they can't finish between mile 25 and the finish, as opposed to the preceding 25 miles. And it has been said that it's because their brain tricks them into thinking that, because they see the finish line and it says, you're finished. And literally it sends a message to their body that it can give up. Does that make sense to you?
I mean, it's almost like anticipatory fatigue or something like that. But the way I would tie in marathons with dreaming as just this, that I had to get this to you, because we talked about it last time. You ran 100 miles one time, right? When you run in your dreams, the neurons are firing no differently than when you run in real life.
Oh, let's do that then from now on.
But you're not moving.
Not less tiring.
It's tiring. You're not moving, but the brain activity is the same. I think that's a powerful thing
to
say about dreams.
It's always great to have you. You've got amazing energy, but never better than today. I have to say, turning the big 5-0 has served you well.
Yeah, I'm happy.
And you like other life changes?
Well, the boys are now men. They're in university, so I'm bouncing back between LA and London more. And just, I was at the National Gallery looking at art and just drifting through different places. And LA freeways and London streets, I got it good.
All right, mate. Great to see you again. There he is, Rahul Jandial. This is why you dream. Transformational. Brian Fogel, how inspiring that dreams and our imagination stay boundless for anyone in the arts and creative spaces. This is a must read. And there's so much blurb on the back from so many people who you know and love from this show.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
It won't be like this forever, so just enjoy it while it's here. It's a really wonderful thing.
And James Bay.
It's about me. It's about my relationship with Lucy. It sums up so much of what went into writing this whole album. We're all works in progress. I still don't necessarily know who I am.
And Depeche Mode's Dave Gahan remembering the late, great Andy Fletcher.
I'll be honest with you, the first thought that came in my head was, I wish I'd been a bit kinder.
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.